Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got Tom Wynn back on the show. We cover all kinds of topics in this interview. One of the big ones, you know, what does Tom do in the off season or when he has breaks between fishing, where, you know, what does he do? What's his routine to stay fresh and ready and hit the ground running when he's back in the boat? I think we can all relate, whether you're a tournament angler or not. You know, you experience the off season, and we all come into the open water season maybe a little bit rusty. What are some things that we're doing? What's some, you know, some content that we're consuming, some practice reps, so to speak, that we can be doing, you know, in our mind to be prepared for those initial outings, and we can get on the water dialed and ready and not waste any time while we're out there, you know, staying efficient. And so much of the preparation and what we do in the off season or just during our big breaks where we're not on the water, you know, Tom just has some great tips and tricks on that. So let's get to it here. We've got tournament angler Tom Wynn. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. And to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com. That link is in the description. Shields is a one-stop shop retailer with all your outdoor needs covered. Shields has all the top brands on inventory in every department and a knowledgeable staff known for great service. With over 30 locations across the country, you can find the nearest store by going online to shields.com. If you can't get to a store, rest assured all their best deals are online as well. So once again, head to shields.com for more detailed information. That link is in the description of this podcast. The Onyx Fish app is an excellent tool for finding your next fishing spot. I'm talking about research tools that we talk about on the JMO podcast all the time with all the top pros here in the Midwest. I'm talking about satellite imagery, fisheries data, lake surveys, contour maps, that and so much more can be found in one place here now with the Onyx Fish app, a phenomenal tool both on and off the water for discovering new great fishing opportunities, many of which you would have never known existed. Link is in the description of this podcast. What have you been up to, man? What are the big updates here so far this winter?
Man, it's just been since winter after the championship and last year, and then launching the university, and then getting into the middle of winter. It's just been, since winter started back in, I don't know, December, January, it's been every weekend, except for one, has been traveling around, doing seminars, educating people on forward-facing sonar, literally every single weekend but one. And my dream, growing up and everything, was to be one of those guys who could make a living in professional fishing. But you know what? It's a bunch of work. It's way more work. It's way more work than just putting on a jersey with a bunch of names on it. You know what I mean? But I absolutely love it. It's a challenge I was willing to accept, and it's been super rewarding, because really the education aspect of fishing, it has been dwindling. So I'm trying to bring it back.
Yeah, man. I mean, we're all about the education. I think that's why we've always kind of enjoyed our time with you, is that, embracing that, you know, talking about, yep, getting better and everything. And two, Tom Wynn University, what's the update? What's the status update on that, man?
Since launching it back in September, it's been very, it's blown me away as far as enrollments go, just surpassing my goals that I had set. But just to see the willingness of people to learn of all ages. Again, like the whole forward-facing sonar debates and stuff like that, and people say, oh, it's these young guys coming into the sport and, you know, learning these electronics. And I've said it before, like, I'm not one of those guys. I get lumped into that category a lot, but man, I'm 45 years old. I'll be 46 this year. And, you know, my main competitors, whether it's on the walleye side or look at these guys on the bass side now, they're 20 to 25 years old. So I think, as far as the university goes, I am just super thankful. I thank God every day. I'm like, I just don't understand like how I've been so fortunate to be put in this position. But I'm at that age where these gentlemen who are 50, 60, 70, even 80 years old, they're very curious about the technology, want to learn it, but they look at me and, you know, I'm 45 years old and they're like, I can trust this guy. And then I have the young guys who are really efficient with the electronics, and they look up and be like, this old guy's still beating us. You know, we have to catch up to him. You know what I mean? So with that being said, like, that's why I think where, you know, people are interested in my content in the university, and everybody who's enrolled has gotten in there and they're like, holy crap, he's not leaving anything out. And I get that question a lot from my competing pros that I'm good friends with on the tour, to people who want to get in tournaments, or like, aren't you afraid you're going to give too much out? But to me, like, the more I teach, the more I'm going to learn. And the more I learn, you know, I'm just going to give it right back, because that's, you know, I haven't been in the walleye industry that long, but it just seems kind of stagnant compared to the bass world. And I think it is due to the lack of education. The bass world has had pure education. Even if they didn't mean to, they've had pure education for the past 10, 12 years because of Bassmaster Live. You know, we can sit there and watch them fish live in tournaments, see what color baits they're using, their cadence, their waypoints even. And so people know what to go buy at the stores to grow the industry, to help build up these bait shops, things like our tackle companies and things like that. And whereas us as walleye anglers could hold on to secrets forever. And that's where I see that we, you know, I just can share what I'm doing, teach people actually how to go out and catch fish with their families and help this industry grow. And hopefully some of these younger guys can, you know, follow along and, you know, just help grow the industry in the future. But the university is going crazy well, and I'm really excited for this spring because I'll be doing an expansion of it, and pretty excited about it. I think a lot of people are really gonna like what they see coming up here pretty soon.
Did you say you were gonna add some bass content to it?
Yep. There's I added 13 videos back maybe 4 or 6 weeks ago, something like that. Where I'm showing, you know, largemouth bass, some smallmouth bass. There'll be a lot more bass content in the future too. Just keep adding to that. But I have a whole new course coming in the spring, and I think that's gonna be exciting.
Was that the plan all along, or has this been like just like a really fast evolution?
It was always a plan to grow the university, but it wasn't until like it was after, I think around the time we released it or after we released it, that we really started brainstorming how we can expand this course. And it just hit me like, holy crap, I got an idea. So it's going to be an, you know, additional course or courses coming in the future, but it's very, very, they're very, very specific. And yeah, I'm excited. Maybe, you know, later this spring, I'll have to, you know, reveal it on your show.
Yeah, be all about that for sure, man. You know what? Do you feel like there's some really common questions that you get when you're, you know, as far as submissions from your subscribers or when you're presenting on it that, you know, we could address right here, right now, that seem to be like most popular topics that come to you?
Oh, yeah. So, okay, I got to say this pertaining to questions. So when people enroll in Tom Wynn University, there's a short questionnaire. I just ask like, what brand or brands of electronics do you use? What you think your experience level is? Things like that. And then the very last thing is a box where I have it, where if you can ask me any question pertaining to forward-facing sonar what would that question be? And people type out their question. And then at the very end of the university, when they're done taking the entire course, it says, was your question answered? And every single time so far, that question has been answered throughout the university. That's cool.
Yeah.
So, you know what I mean? Like that has been awesome that it's so detailed, but the main questions are, what settings do I use? What are my settings for my Garmins or for the, you know, people's Lowrances, their Hummingbirds? They're like, what are your settings? And, of course, again, those questions are answered through there.
Yep.
That's a big question. They want to know the difference between mounting the transducer on a pole versus a trolling motor. There's a question, there's a lot of questions about power, whether lithium is a must or not, or is 16 volts better than 12? And then you get questions on, you know, what, like there's guys who live on reservoir systems, river systems that have a bunch of junk fish and want to know, you know, is it possible to live scope shallow water where you have thousands of junk fish and one or two walleye sitting in the middle? And, you know, so there's a lot of questions and people are very, very curious, and it depends on their experience level as well. Like they're,
right,
you know, or they're, one of the big questions, Tom, I'm not seeing my jig. I can't see my jig. And, you know, and I teach people how to do that, whether it's through the university at seminars. Now the biggest question is forward facing sonar going to be banned? And I have an answer for that too, but you know, it's like, it's they're just a lot of curiosity surrounding it and a lot of people wanting to learn it. Even there's people who were in my seminars out, where was I? In Bismarck, actually, for the show out there. One of the guys in the front, right before I turned my mic on, he's like, I'm not a big fan of this cheater box. And I'm like, oh, okay. And I'm like, are you here just out of curiosity?
Yeah, why are you sitting in the front row? It sounds like a heckler for a comedian or something.
Yeah, he was just like right in the front too. And I was like, what are you here out of, you know, you just here to learn it? He goes, well, I'm curious, you know. And
cheater box curious? We could get a t-shirt made. I'm cheater box curious.
Yeah. Oh, Randy Blockett.
Yeah. Cheetah Box curious, and put a picture of Randy Blockett on the back of it.
So, you know, after the seminar, I said, oh, what'd you think? And, you know, and he's like, well, you know what? He goes, it's not what I thought it was, you know, and what he meant by that was, and I always had this feeling like people thought it was some kind of magic camera thing or something where you drop it down and you can actually see a fish as a fish looks, you know what I mean? And I learned that too when I was invited back in the summer before I won the championship, before any of that, I was invited by the Minnesota DNR to be their keynote speaker for what they call their DNR Academy, which is a 3-day event where all of their DNR officials get together at Camp Ripley in Minnesota. And when I hear all their DNR officials, I'm thinking in my mind, if I had to guess, I'd say 60 to 80 people, whatever. I had to speak on that first day of their academy at 3:30. I walk into that auditorium at 2:30, walk into over 400 people. I'm like, what?
Nice.
Yeah. And then the director is up on the stage giving a, you know, his rundown of what the 3 days are going to be and just letting his people know what to expect and what they're going to discuss. And then he asked if anybody had any questions. And there was four gentlemen in the audience who, they didn't have questions. It was all comments and they were all directly negative to forward facing sonar.
Wow.
Like saying, you know, are we going to talk about the potential ban, which is not going to happen. The DNR does not even have the jurisdiction to ban forward facing sonar. First off, it just can't happen. But anyway, they're like, you know, Well, if it, then another guy said, if it can't be banned, we should consider if it's fair chase. Then it went on and on. And I'm sitting there in the back thinking, oh my goodness, I got to go up there in a minute and talk, because they invited me to talk about forward facing sonar, not to argue for or against it. That even shouldn't even be an argument, really. But the DNR guy up there, the director, he's like, well, you know, just to be straight up, he goes, in our angler surveys in the last 2 years, we're hardly seeing anybody catch a six fish walleye limit with or without it. You know, we're not seeing any differences. And catch and release is way bigger now than it ever was with the new generations. And also, so these guys were almost arguing in the crowd, and I paid attention to two of the loudest ones were. And so when I went up on stage, I did my introduction, and I asked the crowd, how many of you have a forward facing sonar in your boat? And 10% or less raised their hand. And then I turned on one of my screens on the big projector of my live scope, one of my live scope recordings, and I paused it, and I said, how many of you have ever seen a live scope recording? And about the same amount of people raised their hand. But the two gentlemen that were the loudest against it, that had never seen a screen, doesn't own it, knew nothing about it.
Yeah.
And so that was my point, is like, to them saying, this is, you know, why I think, and I said it, I said, this is why I think there's some people who are against it, because they literally don't know what it is. And if they Google catching fish or YouTube catching fish with forward facing sonar, what are you watching? You're watching the hook sets. You're not watching the hours or days spent in between locating these fish.
Yeah.
And so I said, I get it, but this is the reality. And then when I showed them my screen recordings, and they could see that we're actually studying returns and not like video footage of a fish. And I think it hit home with a lot of people who needed to see that, hey, it's not magic. It's not something that is going to, like, the technology itself isn't going to destroy our systems. If anybody's going to destroy our systems, it's irresponsible humans.
Yeah. Which has been true since the beginning.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, we've heard it for years where people all were harvest and this and that, and it's just people. It's not the technology. Exactly.
You're busy off season. You're doing all these seminars, man. You're grinding. I mean, you're running your own business, which, you know, I can totally appreciate, but it keeps you kind of really close to the, you know, it keeps you close to the sun, so to speak. I'm curious about your off season. I'm curious about everybody's off season. I haven't been asking anybody on the podcast yet, but I think, you know, this is kind of a fun thought, you know, for me, as far as interviewing you, is I'm curious how the off season plays a role, like, in your whole, in the whole year, the whole season. I mean, tournaments aren't 12 months out of the year. There is, you know, sort of a reset, so to speak, when, you know, most anglers, you know, if they're not full-time pros, you know, they got to go back to work. They got to go back to do their deal. But you keep grinding. You're staying involved in, you know, high-level fishing conversations and environments. So I'm curious, you know, when you have time to prepare for the next season, and how you, you know, sort of stay in that, you know, constantly learning, constantly getting better process. You've already mentioned it, you know, just, you know, having teaching people helps you learn, kind of a deal. But I kind of want to expand on that. Is there anything, anything about your off season that you're intentional about, is in terms of, you know, putting last season behind me and getting ready for next season?
Yeah, I mean, getting it, actually, for me, it's like putting last season completely out of my mind. It, you know, just I had a phenomenal season. I don't know if I'll ever have another season like it. But like, and I think I've talked to you about it before, where, you know, I don't really prepare myself. It's been 3 or 4 years now that I've actually done homework on a lake or a river before I go. I just go now. And when I get there, or the day before I get there, that's when I'll look at a map, for example, of the lake and be like, okay, here's where I'm going to start pre-fishing tomorrow. So I feel that too many people get spun out. And
my hand is being raised right now.
Yep.
I'm raising my hand right now.
Too many people get spun out. They're like, I'm going to hit this spot, that spot, that spot, that spot. And they're not giving their primary first or second spot. They picked spot number one or spot number two for a reason, but they're not giving those spots long enough. And they're moving around too much to spot 5, 6, 7, 8, when they should probably just grind out those one or two spots and find why the fish are there. If they're shallower than what you thought, deeper than what you thought. That's just me. But in the off season, and I hate to keep going back to the university, but my thing is, for the even before the idea of releasing something like that, I was always about watching screen recordings. So not of where I'm going, but just screen recordings of my forward facing sonar. Because here's the thing, I think everybody does this. So if you're out there, you're fishing a full day of live scoping, or if you're on vacation or a weekend, 3 days full of live scoping, and then a week or two passes where you have to go back to work and stuff like that, you get back in your boat and you just had a phenomenal 3 days of catching walleyes or bass, but you get back in your boat, you look at your screen, you're like, huh, like, is this a walleye? Is this a bass? Is this?
Yeah, you're kind of like at square one again.
Yeah, yeah. So because I've been constantly looking at these screen recordings when I'm doing these seminars, when I'm preparing for the seminar, going through and rewinding these videos so I'm ready for the next day, I'm watching these screen recordings. So I think I'm going to be way better prepared this coming year for my tournament circuit because, dude, I've been looking at them almost every single day of this winter. And I think I'm just going to be, way more prepared than I ever have mentally. Like, just knowing now when I go out there, there's no question. Like, I know what I'm looking at and I'm ready to go. So that is that part of it, but there is something to be said for the break we do have between tournaments. I'm glad we don't have tournaments 12 months out of the year. We all need that break. We all have to have that break so we can actually work. Tournaments don't make us money. That's for sure. If people are trying to think, oh, I'm going to go fish tournaments to make a living, just from tournament winnings, you're kidding yourself, you know. But you know, our day jobs, which mine, you know, I still have the salons, but my other day full-time day job now is in the fishing industry, which I'm super thankful for. But because of that too, it keeps my mind into fishing all year long now, and where it didn't before. But then when my first tournament comes up here in the Missouri River on the NWT, third week of April, I'll be ready. I'm just going to go out, put my boat in, and start looking at maps then.
The Onyx Fish app is an excellent tool for finding your next fishing spot. I'm talking about research tools that we talk about on the JMO podcast all the time with all the top pros here in the Midwest. I'm talking about satellite imagery, fisheries data, lake surveys, contour maps. That and so much more can be found in one place here now with the Onyx Fish app, a phenomenal tool both on and off the water for discovering new great fishing opportunities, many of which you would have never known existed. Link is in the description of this podcast. It's one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. And to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com. That link is in the description. Shields is a one-stop shop retailer with all your outdoor needs covered. Shields has all the top brands on inventory in every department and a knowledgeable staff known for great service. With over 30 locations across the country, you can find the nearest store by going online to shields.com. If you can't get to a store, rest assured all their best deals are online as well. So once again, Head to shields.com for more detailed information. That link is in the description of this podcast. How would you explain your transition from being a person that would study lake maps and study, you know, gather tons of information versus now you say, you know, you keep your mind sharp. You're watching screen recordings just so that when you get on the water, like that makes total sense to me. I have so much fun obsessing over lake maps and getting my milk run of spots figured out. And that makes me feel so prepared. Yep.
How many times have you gotten your milk run, you know, your waypoints put in your phone and you put them into your graph and then you go out to this new lake and you go to your first few spots and you don't catch a single fish.
Oh, and it crushes your confidence because you were so high on those spots.
Exactly.
And, that'd be kind of a plug for people. Maybe this is some part of your seminars and stuff, but people, it's so easy nowadays to just record on your own units.
Yeah. I teach people how to do that. Like it's no secret. Like that's another thing too. And being people are like, oh, dang, he must have some kind of, you know, it must be a special deal or something he's using to do that. But I literally teach people how to do that for themselves so they can go home and study them. And if they see something that they're not quite sure what they're looking at, they can send it to me, you know? So
that's
it's
amazing.
So it's pretty cool. And, but like I said, like it's a confidence thing, not just tournaments, just fishing in general. You're taking the family out to a new lake to go camping or to fishing or for fishing for a weekend or a week. And you do this research, which there's nothing wrong with the research. It's always interesting. It's always cool, but it's easy to say, but hard to do. And that is keeping your confidence. Like, cause you hit those few spots and you think, oh yeah, this point or this hump is there has to be fish there. And you go and it really does. It crushes your confidence. You're like, dang it. Like now what?
If they're not there and everything that you've ever learned or heard on a YouTube video or in a podcast, as far as a seasonal pattern, you know, everything about, you know, why these fish are supposed to be on these spots, man. And then you go to the first four spots and they're not there.
Yep.
You're spun out. Like you were just flat spun out, even if you're not trying to admit it.
And it doesn't have anything, you know, that part doesn't have anything to do with forward facing sonar either. Like when I do get to that lake or river for the first time, I go and zoom in on the map. I scroll through the map real quick. I look for certain areas or features that I'm confident with starting at, and I'll just go. I'll either start closest to the ramp or I'll start farthest from the ramp and work my way back. But the map is the map. The lake contours aren't going to change from last year when the tournament circuit was released till the tournament starts. Those contours, everything's going to be the same. So on that day, I just pick a few handful of spots and I run to these spots. I don't even waypoint them. I just look at it and I'm like, okay, I'm going to go here. If I catch a couple fish, then I'll waypoint them. Then I expand from there. But then it just keeps me from thinking my brain has to hit every single one of these 50 spots that I marked when I was in my house.
You know?
So. But that's just me.
No, that makes a ton of sense. But there is, you know, the other, you did also, say something that I think is meaningful where you do learn a lot from the lake study. That's a lot of great information. And it's probably a phase of an angler's career that you almost have to live through because there is a ton of learning that happens there. But it's a lot of humble learnings. Humbling yourself because, man, that's been my experience. Like I'm sort of in that phase right now where I'm just really obsessed over, you know, just staying immersed. Like if I can't be on the water, what can I do to help myself? You know, those are the big questions. And, you know, Tom Wynn University, what a resource. But all the resources, like I'm paying attention to everything I possibly can. And, but that's such a great point of like, just having it on the front of your mind that, you know, the lake study, it can be meaningful. It can be a tremendous tool. It can be, a really good time waster and compared to like, say, playing video games or whatever.
Yes, for 100%, I agree with that.
You know, but like there's just, you know, it's better than so many things. So it's like, yep, okay. But have it on the front of your mind that, you know, when you get there, you just, you know, have the mentality that just show up with your toolbox, you know, and your lunch pail. Be prepared to do a bunch of hard work and be prepared to try to operate to your fullest potential, you know, and also learning at the same time, be an open book.
Yep.
But just show up with your set of skills and be as efficient as you can and work really, really hard at it. And then at the end of the day, start to, you know, create some expectations on, you know, what's out there, what you can do better, you know, the next day or whatever. But man, I create a ton of expectations for myself. I just trying to create what's one more waypoint that I could have before I go. Cause yeah. Makes me feel prepared, but that emotional side, you know, or just sort of that human behavior that you got to be very conscientious of that, man, you know, the reality is that I haven't been looking at my, forward sonar for so long. It's mm-hmm. going to take me a half a day of casting at, you know, crappies and little everything. Smallies. And I'm going to be casting at every, you know, little glow in the dark thing that shows up on the screen. And, I'm just going to cannibalize my time and I'm going to be so focused on the waypoints that I'm not going to bump up a little shallower or push out a little deeper. And just see, you know, what the real pattern is, because it's like I've created this pattern in my head that almost has to be true.
Yep.
But man,
a few years ago, I started saying the phrase, you know, retrain your eyes, you know, and that's for me too, is like retraining my eyes before I get back out there on the water, whether it's, like I said, 2 weeks between trips or the whole winter. And so, it's really cool and interesting, and I'm so appreciative, and I'm just so thankful that when I go in and look at the lessons that I have, and I can see, like, in, you know, the individual logins, and I can see how many times people look at individual lessons, whether these lessons are 45 seconds long or 3 minutes long. It's cool to see, and these aren't people who are watching these clips that are confused or have questions. They're literally watching 20, 30, even 60 to 70 times, like one clip over and over and over, just to see that fish's reaction, what it looks like. And for me to see that people are doing that and understanding, now I'm not even talking tournament anglers, you know what I mean? I have, it's everybody just now just taking that to heart, like retraining their eyes and understanding that they need to be ready for open water. And here before open water begins, I'm just seeing way more and more activity and so many more, like just messages, thanking for the content, and even from beginners to tournament anglers, it's just awesome to see. But yeah, everybody just needs to keep their eyes retrained. Whether it's from the, you know, things you can find on your computer to things that you do yourself. And it just, you're just going to make yourself way more efficient.
If somebody did like a live bait university or like a trolling university, like on that same level, and just like went through it like curriculum style, you could mm-hmm. be out there like, you know, rigging red tails. If you just made a curriculum on it, man, I'd watch that too.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, and it's not like this curriculum-based learning isn't limited to any style, any technique. It's not limited to fishing. Like, shoot, you could do one on how to start a successful podcast. Like, start, you know, how, you know, what you need to have. You know, it could be anything. And it's just all about teaching people. And it's education before entertainment. There's always some entertainment involved no matter what we're doing, but you know, as long as we're teaching people just like you are, that's where, you know, people truly grasp onto and they remember that, hey, I learned that here, you know.
Yeah, man. All right, fishing wise it's river season. What tidbits can you give me for river fishing? You know, you and I have actually talked river fishing before, and that was like a fun thing, you know, when you got into walleye fishing, tournament fishing, that rivers weren't necessarily a strong suit for you, or a confidence, or just, you just didn't have a ton of experience mm-hmm. fishing walleyes on rivers. you know, but you had a fun little fun evolution to that, yeah. You know, on the Mississippi River. Anyways, mm-hmm. I'm curious, you know, what are some things, you know, some 5-10 minute talkers here that you could pass along to folks that that are fishing on river systems for their first few outings of the year, as far as finding fish, catching fish? Like, what are like the big picture topics that you feel like somebody's got to have dialed in?
Well, I mean, in the spring they're running upstream to spawn, and if your river has dams on it, that's where they're going to be stopped. They turn around and just keep turning. They keep coming up to the dam because, you know, they're not realizing that wall's always there. But, you know, but that's where you see all your boats. So my thing is now is I'm using the tools I have in my boat. So like if you go to the Mississippi River or Pool 4 or whatever, we're super loaded with boats this time of year. And it's so easy now. I shouldn't say easy, but it's way more easier than it was now to get away from that crowd and find your own little spot. Meaning that spot could be the size of your boat. But the way we're able to find these spots now, so many people are focused on looking for these current breaks where these fish can get set up and rest. So focus on finding these current breaks above the water, whereas now we can use our electronics to find these little subtle current breaks under the water. And, you know, just going around, scanning around, looking around for a big boulder where on the downstream side of it is a little underwater current break, or a tree that's laying down that creates a current break. It could be really small, but this time of year, those fish are looking, they're tired from running upstream. And if they do go upstream and spawn, they're really tired. So then they just look for any little subtle areas where they can get out of that swift current or any current at all, like on the Missouri River. Like, just find that that's what I'm looking for, whether it's a little cutout in the bank or if it's, like I said, a tree, a boulder, anything like that under the water that creates that. There's always fish there. And it's nice now because we can get away from that crowd. And as you know, the season progresses, like we just talked about, like people look for these points where fish gather, and they do. So that's the thing. We go to these points, we go to these humps, and we're like, wow, there's a bunch of fish there, but they're not biting. That's what's crazy. They've been so educated, but those fish aren't always on those little points. They move, right? So one of my favorite places to look now is between these points, between these spots that we always focus on before, and intercepting these fish as they're traveling, because that's when they're going to be the most active anyway. So that's after that first tournament I ever fished on the river and zeroed. Since then I've had, I think, mostly top 10s, because I learned a lot what not to do, and I learned how to go find those subtle little sneaky spots using my electronics and have water to myself.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about finding stuff that doesn't show up on a contour map. How often would you say, or what, like, you know, whether it's pre-fishing, tournament fishing, just overall, what percentage of the time do you feel like, or what percentage of your success you feel like comes from spots that aren't on a contour map that you put the work in to find versus
almost all of them,
community type spots? Really?
Almost every single one of them. Yeah. And like, I haven't really ever fished a community spot. And when I did, I zeroed again. And that's my only zero of my short career so far. And, but here's the other thing. So back when Nate and I fished AIM Minnesota circuit, and especially on NWT too, one of the biggest comments I get from other competitors was like, where have you been fishing all week? Like they don't ever see me. Even in Minnesota, when we're on these smaller lakes, like Mille Lacs, for example, Mille Lacs is big, but it's a round bowl, right? And when you think you have 100 boats there,
somebody's going to see
everybody, everybody's going to see everybody. But on Mille Lacs, it was very rare that Nate and I would ever get seen on Mille Lacs. And we get the question all the time, where are you guys, where have you guys been? You know, we're like, we're out there fishing. We're not fishing, but that goes in NWT too. Same thing. It's rare that I'm fishing around anybody. Like then, at the championship, I was probably 80 miles south of the crowd.
Yeah.
You know, so, it's just about finding those spots and forget we almost have, don't forget everything about traditional, traditional migration patterns or something. It's not like we need to remember that, but also keep in mind too, that it's not always the case. Like that and then if you have those spots to yourself, whether it's a mile away from the crowd. Oh, okay. Another good example. On the way back in from the championship, on Lake Huron, at the mouth of the little river where we all launched from, on the way back to kill 20, 30 minutes when everybody got back in, everybody would fish around this mouth of this thing. There's like a horde of boats, 20, 30 boats sometimes fishing out there. And me, as I was coming back, I saw them up there and I'm like, I never fished this spot in practice, but I stopped a mile and a half short. I could see the boats and I'm like, why not just stop here? You know what I mean? And dude, 2 days in a row, day one and day two, I stopped there and caught a fish to upgrade. And I never fished it in practice. So I upgraded a fish, but the crowd was over there and, you know, and they were doing their thing over there and I stopped. Yeah. Short, and it was crazy. It was nuts. Then on day three, it was on my mind, like, do I just stop there and fish all day?
yeah.
But you know what I mean? You don't have to go and be where everybody else is. Find those little subtleties, and you know, there's going to be fish everywhere. That's what I'm learning too. It's just finding those little subtleties, especially in river currents. They all like getting out of the current. So you just have to find those little spots. Even if it's enough for two or three fish to fit, as they're swimming through, they're going to stop for a little bit before they move on. And they're just going to cycle through. And in my experience, a person could sit there for 6-7 hours on a spot the size of your boat and all day long, and you're going to be consistent catching fish all day long. You're not going to catch them. You might go an hour without catching one. But then they filter back through, another school filters back through, and they settle there before they move on. But I mean, it in a river, I'm learning now it's easier to find where these fish are going to rest.
Is there any consistency to, you know, where those tiny little spots show up?
The biggest clue I can give, I think the biggest, the spots I look for the most are on the downstream side of where a creek dumps in, the mouth of a creek opening into it. Because if something's floating through there, if it's a tree, if it's a dock, if it's a refrigerator, and it comes around that corner and it slows down a little bit and it's going to get stuck on something. And so that's where I look for the most, you know, start looking, and then, you know, I'll waypoint those, catch some fish, and then I will look from point to point or creek mouth to creek mouth, just scanning, looking for anything. And most of the time in a river, it's wood and trees that get lodged somewhere. Even trees will get lodged at the base of those big buoys that are, you know what I mean? That are floating, they get snagged down there on the bottom and they're sitting down there. And there's times when you can, you know, just sit there and pick off a fish or two as they come through and rest behind that tree or log that's wedged down there on the river floor.
You know, you got me thinking right now, like, you know, like I said, I obsess over map study. So I can look at a map for a couple of hours and start to break down, you know, the areas that have the most good looking spots on a map. Or you know, most spots that make the most sense, mm-hmm. and spots that are, you know, or areas, say 1 mile or half a mile, or maybe, you know, a really big stretch of river that has is almost void of good looking spots on a map. But those fish got to migrate through there. You'd think if you found something small that was not on the map in those areas that were void of great looking spots or great, you know, great big areas that hold a lot of fish. If you were in one of those voided areas and you could land on something, that would be the deal because it's like the only thing they got.
Yeah, it would. It would be.
Well, now you got me thinking.
Yeah, those, because I mean, you know, those big trees are what I'm thinking in my head now, because I experienced it as a giant root clump of a tree. They can be, they're not on maps. You know, I mean, they're not on our map. So yeah, those are things that, you know, a person could literally sit on. And like, still to this day, I have not seen two heavier walleyes than what Nate and I caught that day, on pool four. They're pre-spawn. They weren't the longest walleyes I caught, but the heaviest, biggest bellies I've ever seen. And we were that current break that we went to after we fished that riprap was an underwater tree with a big root clump. And right, yep. And biggest fish I've still ever seen to this date, weight wise, and under 30 inches.
Man. Yeah, man. It's that time of year right now. Man, a lot of that stuff's happening. The Missouri River here in town in Bismarck is broke open. So when you come here this week or this upcoming week, are you going to pull the boat or what?
Nah, I don't think so. I don't have time. I wish. I don't have time. I'll be hitting Bismarck out there for a day for a couple seminars, and then the day after that, on Saturday, run up to Watford City, do a seminar, a couple seminars up there.
Really? Who's having you over there?
They're having a little sports show up there.
Cool.
Yeah.
I like that town.
I've never been there, so it'd be kind of cool to.
But a lot of, I mean, you're kind of in an area there where it's a lot of Sakakawea anglers and Fort Peck guys too, you know, so just a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun talkers there.
I'm looking forward to that. I love that area and just the people out in North Dakota and South Dakota where I'm at right now. Like, people in the Dakotas seem like they're the most eager to learn and the most eager, I don't know, like when we have a tournament in the Dakotas, the National Walleye Tour has a tournament. That's the biggest turnouts we have across the country are in the Dakotas. It's just awesome to be out here.
What else should we talk about? We're so good on time here, and I just love having you on to kind of get us ramped up, because the tournament season will kick up, and you know what? I'm probably going to be reaching out to you at some point during the season, so I wanted to get at you here early and just get some fun, great updates. But is there anything else that you would want to, you think would be good fishing talk this time of year, or we can close it out just sort of letting people know where they can get a hold of you?
Yeah, you know, I think this time of year, just have to, you know, get ready, and always to, if it's a lake or river, we talked about rivers, but you know, with lakes, this time of year, go, you know, one of my favorite places to start, which I think a lot of you should go check, are where the new weeds are going to start. I actually witnessed it last year on a couple different lakes, where the weeds, you know, in the summer are going to be like 6 feet tall or so, but once they're like a foot from the bottom and just start, it's loaded with walleyes. You're good eater size, which most of us, that's what we're out there after anyway, but you know, but that's one little tip that I have for people that I just started noticing and putting it together in multiple bodies of water last spring when the water's still cold, right after spawn, is hit those lakes, find those, weed beds. It doesn't have to be in a bay. It doesn't have to be off a point. Just find those young weeds. I think that those younger weeds coming up is a really good high concentration of oxygen, because the lakes have been frozen most of the winter, and that just the oxygen rich young weed growth holds a lot of those walleyes after they're trying to recover from the spawn. So that's just another tip before we close out.
Oh, I love it.
Yep.
I love it. Well, where can people find you? Where can people get a hold of you? Do you have any sort of an upcoming schedule that we could plug? I mean, this, people might be listening to this, whatever, 6 months, a year, 2 years from now. So some whatever. But as far as right now, anything content that you want to plug? I mean, we've talked about Tom Wynn University, but your social medias, whatever.
Social media, they're both just, Facebook and Instagram, Tom Wynn Fishing. And that's about it as far as that goes. Of course, the university that you mentioned. And then, I mean, depends on when people see or hear this, but I got still a couple more seminars yet this winter. You just follow, my schedule. I always post where I'm going to be the following week. So then once tournament season starts, I got some, doing some speaking events at some of the area schools and stuff like that for the kids who are getting interested in angling. And other than that, my tournament season starts, and then it's just about gathering content and teaching. And if you guys want to learn anything extra or have any questions for me, or things you'd like me to record, and then hit me up on social media and let me know.
There it is, man. Yeah, I've been rigging rods all winter. I've been spending too much money on stuff on gear. I gotta stop the bleeding. I just gotta catch a fish. I just gotta get out. I gotta find a way to get out and catch a fish to make myself feel better, because I've been I've been self-loathing and medicating with retail therapy and just buying way too much stuff.
Yeah, too bad insurance can't pay for that medication.
Yeah, no kidding. Gosh, you'd think, man, you'd think. Insurance would give you a discount if you're an angler, but instead they charge you more for your
Yeah,
boat.
see.
Gosh, it's crazy how that works, man. It's like you bundle your life insurance or your health insurance with your boat insurance. That should give you a discount on that health insurance, man. Anglers are just so much healthier.
You're saying,
Getting out, getting that fresh air,
it's a good point.
And not, spending their money on fishing reels and not heroin. Come on.